Good. So, welcome everybody. This is week three of this session, session three, I think. And we're starting in on the first of 2 weeks about time. Let me say something, and I'm going to send an email about this around soon to the people in the teacher training program. It's been a very challenging time for me, a busy time, you could say. And I feel like I've kind of let the teacher training go a little bit, but I will really try to get back up to speed next week. It looks like I'll be able to do that. And so the people in the teacher training program will be hearing from me soon about that. Otherwise, I hope things are going well. If not, let me know. So we're talking about time. And I should start by noting that there's a mistake in the assigned reading for this week. Pages 179 to 182 for Love of Knowledge is actually the assigned reading for next week. The fact that you read it this week, I don't think will cause you any harm. But it is the reading for next week. I'm pretty sure. Let me double check that. I mean, that's how I have it listed for myself. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's a short reading next week. And that means we may be able to continue. We can't get through everything this week. Maybe we can continue with it this next week. There's a lot to talk about, especially because I want to start by saying something that's a little bit peripheral. It's not directly addressed in any detail in the reading, but I think it's important to think about whether you're studying TSK or thinking about TSK. It's really a question about ourselves and who we are in this culture. It's kind of a cultural point, and it really just grows out of the statement at the bottom of page 51 of When It Rains. In the orientation, I mentioned that people sometimes see the reading, this chapter that we read for this week. They say, well, this is kind of abstract. Maybe I can't prove logically or that it makes sense to talk about moments of time, basically because it's just very difficult to figure out once you have moments how they can be connected up. That's the fundamental point. Logically, it's hard to see how that works, but why should I care about that? You know, it's just logic, and it must not be right, you know, something like that. And in fact, that ties into, you might say, a more general question about TSK. You know, what people will say, if people who kind of look at the books but don't get into them will sometimes say, well, this is so intellectual or abstract or theoretical, and that's not how I like to practice, or that's not how I like to explore the nature of reality or explore my own nature, or however people like to say that. I think the answer to that generally, but also specifically in this case, has to do with the fact that we really are, we're abstracting. We're already using a certain kind of position which is based on reason. Even if we don't think of ourselves as philosophers, or you've never really tried to work things out, still we all make sense out of things based on a whole set of assumptions, which really are abstractions. So at the very bottom of page 51, it says, this argument may seem abstract, and we've grown used to dismissing the value of reasoned analysis. It's like, yeah, okay, if I analyze this out, you can prove to me, you know, if you accept the way that the argument unfolds in this chapter, you can prove to me that there's a problem with the way I usually see things. So what? Now, that's the issue. And the question that I wanted to raise and discuss for a minute or so, well, it'll probably take 3 or 4 minutes, is why do we take that position? Why do we think that it doesn't matter whether we can rationally or logically support a particular argument? And the answer, it seems to me, has to do with a kind of historical development in our culture. You know, starting in the 18th century, really, there was a reaction to the very strong emphasis on science and mathematics that had grown up in the Enlightenment. And you know, if you really want to trace this out, you have to do a whole inquiry into, you know, Western intellectual history. We're not going to do that. But you have science and mathematics coming into their own, you could say, in the Enlightenment. And then you begin to have a reaction against that. And one of the classic statements of that reaction comes from David Hume, who was an English philosopher, well, Scottish, actually, who said, reason is a whore, by which he meant that you can make reason serve anybody, any argument that you want. You can always come up with reasons. And since that's so, why should we care about reasons? You know, reason, another thing he said, I believe this was Hume, he said, reason is and ought to be the slave of the passions. You know, there was kind of a discovery in reaction, as I said, to this new world of science and mathematics. There was kind of a reaction where people said, well, if I look at my own nature, you know, really I'm controlled by my passion. You know, what I that determines how I live my life, what I want, what I don't want, what I suffer, what gives me joy. Those are the important things in my life. And so I don't really care too much. You know, go ahead and make your arguments, but you know, I'll just set them aside and go about living my life. That move then gets taken up in the 19th century, in the 20th century, and a classic formulation of it, you could say, is with Freud, who introduces the idea of the unconscious. And so consciously, we may hold to we may accept certain arguments and certain positions, but you know, the more real part of our situation is unconscious. And again, there are all these desires and wishes and you know, parts of ourselves that we don't really acknowledge. And the reasoning, it's like the reasoning just takes place on the surface, you know. It's a little bit like in English, we have this expression, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, the Titanic is headed for an iceberg and you're completely unaware of that and you're just busy kind of rearranging the furniture a little bit to make it more comfortable. Reason is like that. You're just sort of playing with stuff on the surface. It has nothing to do with what really gives our lives meaning and significance. Michael has a comment here about that. He says, using closely reasoned arguments to refute the conclusions of prior reasoning does seem a questionable technique. However, the TSK books always then break through to a striking recognition of what we are losing: freedom, wholeness, and the capacity to realize our dreams. Yes, that's exactly right. And you know, I think in the orientation, I already quoted this and it came up in the reading, when we're talking about polar knowledge, and that's where we're actually going to focus. I'm just talking more generally now about using logical arguments. But when you look at polar knowledge, Rinpoche says, well, when we ask about whether polar knowledge is, I forget the word he uses, is real, we're asking whether we can be free. You know, if we accept a certain understanding, we are in effect giving up our freedom, even though we don't think of it that way. And of course, you know, part of the role of reason is to show why that's so. But we're looking at a different role of reason, which is to say, you know, it should make a difference. It should make a difference if the fundamental structure that we accept, which is this polar knowledge structure, which is based on a linear view of time. That's why it comes up in the time section now. This fundamental structure of polar knowledge, if we can show, you know, it doesn't make sense, it doesn't hold together, then we ought to create a kind of opening for investigating further, for asking new questions. And we have a motivation. And you know, the fundamental point that we're driven by our desires, by our motivations, our intentions, let's say, that is very true at a very deep level. So we have a motivation because of this point that we are living our lives in a way that condemns us to a loss of freedom and condemns us to being kind of pushed around by forces that are outside our control. So that's the motive, and that's why we want to look at the analysis. And the analysis, another way to say that is that, you know, we're already, when we accept polar knowledge, we're already philosophers. You know, when we accept a particular view of linear time or time as linear, and we say past, present, future, one moment follows the next moment, follows the next moment, we say, well, that's just the way it is. Everybody knows that. But in fact, that's just a theory, a hypothesis. It's a way of explaining our experience. And it's not a very good theory. And in fact, it's a theory that doesn't stand up if you look at it. Now, perhaps in a sense, and this is related to what Michael said, perhaps you could say, if you can take apart that theory and show that it doesn't make sense and show that moments can't be connected, which again is the main point in this chapter, that doesn't mean your life changes, because somehow that theoretical insight has to be activated. It has to be turned into a new way of living our lives. So in that sense, you can say, reason doesn't have a transformative power. But if you don't think it through, then you'll never even ask the question, and you'll never be able to get to the possibility of transformation. It's one of the really key things about TSK in general, and that's why I'm taking some time on it now. It just seemed like a good occasion. You know, Rinpoche writes in the TSK books in different places, he says, you know, anybody can make use of this approach, or anybody may find it valuable to question in the way that TSK questions. No matter what your commitments, no matter what your position, no matter what other ways you try to investigate the significance of your life, you know, and I'm thinking here of meditation, but you know, many other possibilities, no matter what else you do, anybody else may find it valuable, should find it valuable, to ask these questions. Because as long as we're not questioning at the level that TSK activates, we're taking certain things for granted. You know, this phrase in English, taking for granted, I think is a very interesting one. To grant in this sense basically just means to give. Certain things are given in advance. We've given them, we've received them, and we don't question them because we were given them. It's like if you imagine that you're given these things when you're 2 years old, or really starting from the moment you're born, or maybe even before that. But let's say starting at 2 years old, this is what's given, and there's some parts of that which later you may decide you can question, or may realize you can question. But a lot of it is going to go unexamined. And we really are taking it apart at a very, at that level, at the things, you know, the level where we take things for granted. We're going to, in a way, we want to give back the gift, you know. We want to give back what's been given, or say, well, I'm not sure. Let me really look for myself. One of the themes that comes up sometimes in TSK is that people say, you know, when I was little, I can remember asking really basic questions, or I can just remember looking up at the sky and wondering, you know, just this kind of sense of wonder. But then I lost that as I grew older. And TSK really is going back to that sense of wonder or that sense of fundamental questioning. And one way to start that process is through reasoning and through this, you know, kind of abstract presentation, because we're questioning at an abstract level. We're saying this idea that we have moments of linear time that are connected together in some mysterious way, that's a philosophy. That's not our experience. And we tend to think of it as being our experience. And so you need to open that up. We want to open that up. So you do that through reasoning, and then you also do it through inquiry of different kinds. And, of course, we'll be looking at that also. So I won't, you know, there's, you could make some interesting comparisons between the scientific method and TSK in this regard, but I'm not going to do that because I think we've spent plenty of time on this. But it's an important underlying point. I think, you know, we're always wanting to ask ourselves, in a way, the fact that you're still in this course after all this time, shows that you do find some value in TSK and that there's something there to that is rewarding to investigate. So I don't have to spend too much time convincing you. But sometimes, you know, everybody sometimes, I think, has this kind of little suspicion. They say, well, but even if I see it differently, how's that going to change my life? Well, that's what we've been getting at. And also, when you talk with other people about TSK, people in the teacher training program, but just generally, you know, if people say, well, what do you do on Sunday mornings in this thing? You know, why are you giving up your Sunday mornings for this? It's good to be able to think that through. So Remco has a question here. He says, I hear you and also feel that everybody should wonder. But if in discussion people say to me, why should I? It still feels everything you say is more a moral point than something that convinces the unconvinced. Okay, well, I'm really glad you asked that question, Remco, because it goes exactly to the point that this is really fundamental to understanding what TSK is about. When you say a moral point, you know, I'm not sure I understand exactly what you have in mind, but it seems like saying this is good for you. Or you have a duty, even, you know, people should fully develop their capacities. And if we just accept what's been, if we accept what's been given to us, if we continue to take for granted, which is what most people do all the time, we're missing that opportunity. We're wasting that opportunity. And so there's a kind of an obligation to make full use of the opportunity we have as human beings. That would be one way of saying it there. Countless ways of saying it. That would be the moral side. The side that is perhaps more convincing is actually related to what Michael said in the last comment in the chat box, and that is, and the TSK has to do with freedom and the lack of freedom. It has to do with fulfillment and the lack of fulfillment. It has to do with the limits that we impose on ourselves. And, you know, I'm not sure, and I think this is something for everybody to explore for yourself and also with others if they ask these questions. I'm not sure that you can just say to somebody, look, you're not free, you know. You accept these limitations and you don't even recognize them as limitations. And TSK helps you to see the limits. I'm not sure that in itself will move people very much. You've got to be able to then have them get a taste of it. And in that sense, you know, I think TSK is like a traditional practice where you do something like meditation or kumyin, let's say. The idea is get a taste of it. You know, realize that there's more that's possible. And that in itself is, that's what's going to move people. So for some people, it will be the books. You know, I would say probably not for most people. That is, in the sense that if you're reading something and something kind of dawns within you, it's like, so we're spending a lot of time on this, but I think it's really important, so I am going to stay with it. Sometimes people, you know, most people, I think, have their favorite novels or their favorite movies, right? And if you say, well, what is it about the movie, let's say? Well, okay, there's different kinds of movies, but so you may have different reasons. In a way, novels are a better example. So I'm going to go back to novels. You have your favorite novel, and if somebody asks you, what is it about that novel? Why is that your favorite? So I'm going to give you one answer, and again, you could say this in many different ways, and I'm not trying to give you an answer. I'm not trying to describe your experience, but I hope it resonates with something in your experience. When you're reading a novel that really engages you or moves you, it's like you enter into a different world, a different reality. And for the time that you're reading, it's like you become a different person. Something really shifts. And maybe even afterwards, you put down the novel, and this is actually very powerful with movies. So we could go back to the movies on this point. If you leave the movie theater, you know, you walk out into the world, and it's the same world. It's the same street that you that it was when you went into the movie theater, but everything looks a little different. There's just a different flavor to the experience. And I think sometimes reading TSK does the same thing. You some phrase or some sentence or some image or some suggestion just opens up a possibility. So it may be reading, but for a lot of people, it will be more doing the exercises. And last week I talked a little bit about the difference between, let's say, meditation exercises and TSK exercises. And I said that, it seemed to me that in the first book especially, the first TSK book, a lot of the exercises are similar to or in fact are meditation exercises. And people meditate for the same reason. Something shifts. They realize that there are different possibilities in the world. At least that's what I'm saying now. But I think that the kind of exercises that are special to TSK are these little twists. So that it's not as though you spend 45 minutes doing, let's say, an exercise like Marriage of Sound and Breath. I've forgotten whether we've done that in this program, but many of you will be familiar with it. It's an exercise that focuses on the breath and on sound. And you could easily integrate it into a course on meditation. It is that kind of practice. So that's one way to do it. But there are also practices in TSK, and they're related, they're more involved with what I've called variations now, where you just deliberately set out to vary something. So I once read a story, a science fiction story. When I was a teenager, I read a lot of science fiction, and I still think of some of these stories because they really helped, they helped open up this possibility. I read this story where somebody was buying a newspaper at a newspaper stand. And he paid his dime. This was an old story, so it cost a dime to buy a newspaper. And I can't remember now. I think he got a dime back in change. And suddenly he was in a different world. Everything seemed sort of the same, but it was a little bit different. And he realized eventually that the dime that he'd gotten was a dime is an American coin, right? The dime that he'd gotten wasn't the regular dime that he was used to. It was somebody else's dime. And that dime became a little turning point. You know, in order to get back into his real world, he spent a long time looking through all the coins he was getting until he found one that was the regular dime that he was used to. And now, once he had that in his hand, now he was back in the other world. And he found he could go back and forth like that. Well, it's like that. It's not, there's this little turning point, this place where you pivot. And the variations are like that. And TSK is like that. So the world in some ways is very much the same in TSK, but also profoundly different. Now, is that difference valuable? I would say yes. The value in it has to do with this question of freedom, has to do with how we ordinarily live our lives and the limitation that we accept. And that's where you have to say to people, maybe one way to start the conversation is to say, you know, are you completely at peace with your life as it is now? If so, then, you know, go away and enjoy your life. That's fine. And I hope I get to be a part of it too. But if there's something that seems incomplete or pressured, if there's anything there, then that's where you want to look, and you want to see what are the structures that support that feeling of incompleteness or frustration, or the many ways you can talk about that. Okay, Hayward writes here, so we're going on with this conversation. I find the deconstruction of ordinary experience to be of intellect and ordinary experience to be of intellect. I think there's a typo there. And the description to be of. Okay. The deconstruction of ordinary experience to be of intellect and the description of a new way of knowing to be of experience. And therein lies the transformation of value. Right. So TSK brings these two things together, and that's a remarkable thing, really. And it brings them together without making any claims. You know, the other day, I heard someone talking about Vipassana meditation, you know, mindfulness meditation, you could say. And he was talking about taking a retreat. And he said, the basic instruction that you get is simply be aware of experience as it arises from moment to moment, bear attention. But then after a while, as you continue in the retreat, and this was a more traditional Buddhist retreat, you start getting certain kinds of pointers. You know, the people will start to tell you what you're supposed to find if you're aware of experience from moment to moment. And it's subtle, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but you are really imposing a certain orientation. So people may say, well, be aware of how experience changes from moment to moment. It's hard to argue with that. I'm not saying that's wrong, but you are imposing something on the person's experience. You know, they say, oh, I'm supposed to look at how experience changes from moment to moment. Maybe they could try instead looking for what's the same from moment to moment. You know, but we don't do it that way in a Vipassana retreat. Well, TSK, I'm sure there are assumptions built in, but the basic idea is that you're bringing together the kind of orientation and the practices without ever saying to anybody, at least in principle, without ever saying to anybody, this is what you're supposed to find. It's always just asking, what do you find? So Remco has a couple of further points. So we go back to Remco's question, which was, besides telling people that they should investigate their experience, they have a moral duty, you can tell them that there's something valuable there, whatever their set of values is. And he says, the reaction I usually get is a polite form of, okay, this is nice, but I don't see the importance. Exactly like a movie. Only a movie is more easy and this is difficult. If you do not feel the importance of this a priori, so at the outset, you know, before you even begin, then it usually seems frivolous. And TSK is an enormously difficult, effortful way to try to deal with life and disappointments. Okay, well, these are such interesting questions. So a lot of people don't see that much value in, you know, let's say active inquiry, free and open inquiry, Rinpoche says, or creative inquiry, we say, at CCI. A lot of people just don't see that that has much value. So we're really kind of talking about a teaching situation here, but it comes up for everybody, I think. And you also, as I suggested before, you also find yourself asking this question for yourself. You know, it's really, well, so I've been spending all this time. I'm not quite sure how would I describe the change. You know, what is the result of this kind of inquiry? And a lot of people don't see the value. So you know, the task is to discover that value. And I think that probably the best way into that task is to challenge what Remco says at the in the second part of his post here. He says, TSK is an enormously difficult, effortful way to try to deal with life and its disappointments. You know, TSK should be fun. You know, yes, there's some difficulty, and when you're reading, you kind of scratch your head and try to figure out what's going on, and maybe, you know, as I once read a Tibetan Lama describing how he did visualization, he said, well, you could try to get the image straight, firm in your mind, and then you really focus until you get a headache. That's not what TSK is supposed to be about. TSK is meant to be, maybe that's a strange description, but there's a playful quality to it. And Remco says, yeah, for me it is fun, but a lot of people do, and then he stops his comment in the middle here, maybe he's still typing away. So a lot of people do find that it's difficult and effortful. Okay, I can buy that. I agree with that. And in fact, I think that I have a responsibility, and other people, if you find this valuable, so now we're going back into, we're kind of going back into a moral responsibility, I suppose. If you find something valuable in TSK and you think it would be good to be able to share it more widely, you'd like to be able to make exactly that transition from, this is hard work, you know, this seems like a really backwards way to deal with the fact that I feel frustrated. You know, wouldn't it be better to just go out and play football or something, and then I'll feel much better? So you have to be able to make the shift from people who say, this just is too complicated, too hard, too challenging, too difficult, I don't understand it, all of those responses. You have to be able to make the shift from that to, this is fun. This is really, you know, what a great way to spend your time, although I don't like that expression, spend your time, but you know, what a great way to be able to use the opportunities that life presents from moment to moment. You know, what great fun. You need to be able to make that shift. How can you do that? Well, so I think, and we're really kind of stepping far beyond the particular reading right now, but good to talk about these things. I think that we need to find ways to do that don't necessarily depend on the TSK books. I'm thinking about that and working on that myself. I'm not saying that has to be some big assignment that you take on, but maybe all I'm saying is don't feel that, you know, if somebody asks you, well, what is this TSK anyway? Don't feel that the right answer is necessarily to say, well, you should read, and then you tell them the name of your favorite book, you know, in the TSK series, because most people won't be drawn to it. I think something else has to happen. And so if it's just a, you know, if it's just kind of a casual conversation that you're having with someone, and again, you know, everybody has these thoughts come up sometimes, I think, like, well, I don't so much anymore, but for many years I did. But if you're having a casual conversation, you don't want to say, well, go read this book and come back and we'll talk some more, or, you know, maybe you don't even say, come read this chapter and come back and we'll talk some more. Then you just say, well, you know, whatever it is, whatever in that moment as you kind of reflect on your own experience, whatever it is, you just say, this is what speaks to me. You know, this is why it seems to me to be important. And hopefully you bring into that some sense of the person you're talking with, so that it's not just, you're not just holding a monologue. You know? I think that'll work better. Let me say, actually, that I am trying right now to put together a book that will consist of some selections from the TSK books, mostly by Rinpoche, but also some other articles, that are meant as an introduction to TSK. And one of the reasons is because of this, you know, because you can't hand someone time, space, and knowledge and say, here, you know, read this, and then you'll understand why this is valuable, because most people won't get past page 10. So that's one response. And I'm actually fairly far along in that project. I hope within, oh, let's say 2 to 3 months that book will be available. But I'm not giving you any details about it because I'm not sure that it will be available. So I don't want to promise more than I can deliver. Okay, so let's, there's some more comments. So that's great. Let's see. Let's scroll up here. Okay, so Michael says, perhaps a prerequisite to valuing TSK is to find yourself in the midst of a life that feels thin, unwelcoming, and which has made us feel imprisoned in a realm that has not nourished us. That experience, combined with a defeated suspicion that it could be richer, allows us to receive any teaching like water in the desert. Undefeated. Okay, an undefeated suspicion. Okay, thanks. I did wonder about that. Okay, so I think that, as you say, that's true for any teaching. It's like, you know, well, why should I be interested in this? Well, because it meets a need. You know, you have, you recognize that something is missing. And it's a little bit tricky. In Buddhism, this comes up all the time. People say, Buddhism starts with the truth that suffering is pervasive in human experience, and so people react and say, well, that's not my experience. You know, I'm pretty happy with my life. And then you have to kind of struggle with that. I mean, I don't want to get into all that because that has to do with Buddhism and not TSK. But there's always got to be some motive. Now, I actually think that the motive that TSK lends itself to most easily goes more in the direction of fun, because you can always do it from two directions. You can say, there's a problem. You may be ignoring it, or you may not see it completely, but there's a problem. And let's see if we can kind of get clear on what the problem is, and then we figure out what to do about it. But a lot of people don't like to start from the assumption that they have a problem. Right? So the other side is to say, there is something that is so cool, so exciting, so wonderful, you know, come and see. And it's interesting, if you look back to the first TSK book, the opening of the TSK, first chapter, first book, how does Rinpoche choose to introduce this vision? And he does it by using the image of the sky. You remember, he says, wherever we go, whatever we do on this crowded surface of interactions, above us, there's the sky. And in a way, that image doesn't address either suffering or fun, but it does in a kind of subtle way, I think. Because, first of all, there's this crowded surface of interactions. You know, there is this sense of things being kind of closed in. So it's pointing a little bit toward the problematic nature of the way we live our lives. And then on the other hand, there's this sense of the sky. And it's not like the sky is like, you know, seeing a wonderful movie or going to an amusement park or having dinner with friends, but it is, you know, I mean, something that is just sort of, you say, oh, this is fun. But it is relaxing and opening, and it suggests the possibility that we don't have to be trapped in our everyday concerns. So that image at least has the seed of both of those two responses, and both those responses are there. Okay, let's, Hayward says, Perhaps it's difficult to sell TSK before we fully embody the vision. At that time, perhaps the right words occur. So, okay, I would say that's true and not true. Again, you know, a lot of these issues come up with Buddhism, and that's the context that I'm thinking of now. It's like, you know, if you had to say, well, you can't teach anything about Buddhism until you're enlightened, then, you know, Buddhism would have disappeared from the face of the earth, I think, quite a long time ago. I mean, you can say there's always a lineage of enlightened masters, but there's a lot of people around like me who teach Buddhism, you know, who I mean, you know, you are taking a certain risk when you do it because you say, no, do I fully embody it? No. Do I fully embody TSK? No. Do I embody an appreciation for the joy and possibilities that TSK offers? Well, more and more. You know, I think that one's life is an ongoing and deepening or expanding embodiment of what it is that one cares about the most. And I just made that up and it sounds a little too broad, but if I take it literally, then you'd say, you know, so if what you care about the most is getting rich, say, then your life as you get older is going to be an ongoing and deepening, expanding embodiment of wanting to be rich. And that's not going to be presumably very rewarding. Well, so if you make TSK your goal, then yes, there has to be some quality of embodiment before you can communicate it to others. The words in themselves won't do it. And you know, one of the reasons the TSK books do work for the people for whom they work is that I think you get a sense of Rinpoche there. You know, it's like this is embodying some of his realization. So I partly agree and partly don't agree. Okay, let's go on. And Klaus says, we need to embody the fun part. Okay, well, that's very consistent with what we were just saying. Right. And, you know, you can embody some insight or realization with respect to TSK or any other teaching. And not embody the fullness of the teaching, if you know what I mean. It's like, you know, suppose, to take a simpler example in a way than TSK, suppose that you've been doing mindfulness practice and you've realized that being aware of your experience from moment to moment, which is at least an important element in mindfulness, that's very nourishing and rewarding. And so as you deepen your understanding of that, you find ways to share that insight with others and you introduce them maybe to the teachings. And you could say that's what's fun in mindfulness. Does that mean you've really gone to the, you know, that you've really explored the full richness of what it would mean to live life from moment to moment? No, I think not. And I mean, I just have this hypothetical person doing this, but you know, you can understand something about the value of mindfulness without realizing how much it has to offer. And that's true for any kind of teaching, I think. So yes, embodying the fun part would be a great way, because if you just embody the head scratching part, you know, you will not have much of an impact on people. And here's Kathleen saying, when I talk about TSK these days, I liken it to exploration. You never know what's around the bend. It supports a childlike inquiry without judgment or position into everyday living. So that's very nice. I think it's so important in TSK to be clear that you're not trying to establish a particular view or understanding. And exploration is a wonderful word there. If you look at the last two books in the Perspective series, a new way of being and a new kind of knowledge, I think they're called. They both have subtitles where I actually played with that a little bit. I used all these words that kind of had the same feel to them. And one, of course, was exploration. But, you know, exploration, excavation, I'm not quite sure what the others were, embodiment maybe. But the idea was, I was trying to go with the sound of the words to help communicate. But what the words were meant to communicate was, yeah, you're always going further, always going deeper, always entering new territory, undiscovered territory. And so it's, you know, what you embody, you could say, is the journey, the inquiry. You know, you don't embody what you discover, because what you discover is going to be very personal to you in some ways, and maybe not so easy to share. I'm not sure that's quite the right way to say it, but in any event, exploration, yeah, and so creative inquiry. You know, that's why we talk about creative inquiry, and why Love of Knowledge, the book that we are reading right now, talks about free and open inquiry, very much the same thing. Well, okay, so as it turns out, we've spent our time on this conversation, which I think is a great conversation. So I'm very glad we did it. And it turns out to be useful that the reading for next week is so short. I think what I will do is, in the orientation, I'm probably going to say something about the exercise for this week, exercise 14 in Love of Knowledge, Moments Between Moments. And maybe also something about the second exercise, because, you know, we focused a lot now on the words and the language and the books. But of course, the exploration is also experiential, as people have been pointing out. And I think there's something, I think it'd be helpful to do that. It was one of the things I had meant to do in the conversation today. So I'll just do some of that in the orientation. And then next time we will look at this discussion and also at the reading that you probably did for this week because it was assigned, but 179 to 182 of Love of Knowledge. We'll look at both. Okay, well, good. Thank you very much. That was fun. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.